Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel. Joining me here on this Friday morning for the conversation, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, happy Friday. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our listeners on today's episode.
Thanks for having me back, Dan.
So, Shane, quite a few topics we want to cover with our listeners for this week on the geopolitical front. We've been talking about the U.S.-Iran war for quite some time. It appears we've been hearing reports that there may be a potential deal signing this weekend in Europe to end the conflict. What do we know as of this Friday morning?
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster week. You know, earlier this week, there had been some exchanges of fire. Iran downed a U.S. helicopter. So, you know, it felt like things were getting tenser, and we saw the potential for, you know, a full escalation of the conflict back to where it was just, you know, a month or two ago. And some of it, you know, was probably rhetoric by President Trump to really push the Iranians towards a deal. And as of, you know, yesterday, President Trump announced that, you know, a deal is in the making. And we saw some more chatter, you know, this morning. Iran seems to be denying it a little bit. But, you know, I think what we're seeing develop right now is positive and is heading towards possibly signing an agreement this weekend in Switzerland. So, you know, I think until anything is signed, you know, this remains very fluid. But, you know, everything we're seeing at this moment is a positive development. There are some pieces that it looks like, you know, that this deal is going to, you know, be kind of partial in the sense that it's a stronger ceasefire that opens up the straits to a certain degree. And at during this, you know, upcoming phase is when, you know, the U.S. and Iran would negotiate further on Iran's nuclear facilities and capabilities. So a lot of remaining, you know, questions about some of these details. But again, I think, you know, it's going to be a tense, you know, 48 hours or so, but hopefully within that time period, an agreement is signed by both sides.
Well, it does sound optimistic. And to your point, Shane, this has been a roller coaster. As we're speaking, I'm seeing on the media now, I have a news network up that the president is indicating that a deal has been reached and Iranian officials are saying not quite yet. So we will see what the next 24 to 48 hours delivers. And I'm sure we'll follow up with more for our listeners when we speak again next week. Though, moving along, if we come back stateside, earlier this week up on Capitol Hill, the House passed a multi-billion dollar budget reconciliation package. This had faced a lot of debate up on Capitol Hill. Can you walk our listeners through what this package consists of?
Yes, and for a little bit of setup, this is the package that the Senate passed last week. So this went to the president's desk and has been signed into law. This reconciliation package is focused on funding ICE, which is Immigration Customs Enforcement, and the CBP, which is Customs Border Protection. So these two agencies kind of make up immigration enforcement in the U.S. And it funds these two agencies for about $70 billion through fiscal year 2029. So these two agencies will be funded until October 1st of 2029. That was done on purpose because, you know, what Republicans, I think, learned is that they would have a very tough time reaching a bipartisan agreement right now with Democrats on this issue because, you know, immigration is such a hot button issue, and there are some real divisions between the two parties that an agreement is unlikely this time. So this way, Republicans can ensure that, you know, these two agencies would be funded beyond President Trump's second term here, which in theory, would end January 20th, 2029, so that there is no major disruption in that time. And to Republicans' hope is that this would, you know, help avoid any full or partial government future shutdowns in the future. So Republicans view this as progress on that front, but also from being a distraction to other issues, because it was consuming a lot of time and energy for Republicans to address this issue. So now they can get back to, you know, other issues of the day, whether it be, you know, digital asset legislation, or things around affordability, or a number of other topics that Republicans would rather be spending their time on. So a positive development in the sense of, you know, getting this off the books, and Congress can now move on to other issues.
Now, Shane, if we stick with Capitol Hill, I understand that the Senate recently blocked the extension of a key surveillance program that in response to President Trump's selection to replace outgoing Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard. I believe as of yesterday, perhaps a new name has been floated by President Trump to fill that role. But what do concerns consist of amongst lawmakers of the president's selection at that time, and how might this evolve from here?
Yeah, this has been a very interesting few days here with respect to not only the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, but Section 702 of FISA, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and it's an important tool in our national security. Without action, will actually expire today. So, you know, kind of two issues that have been co-mingled at the moment, but start off with the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. You have Tulsi Gabbard, who is stepping down in the coming days from that office. And President Trump has appointed Bill Pulte as the interim DNI. And Bill Pulte currently serves at the Housing Authority, you know, overseeing housing. And, you know, many lawmakers view him as, you know, not really a person who is in depth on the issues, but more of kind of a political guy who is not afraid to do some of the president's bidding. So, you know, there were even Republicans that felt uncomfortable with him sitting in this critical role for our nation's security. And so I think you saw some pushback from Republicans. And to your point, this led to President Trump yesterday afternoon nominating Jay Clayton to be the full director of national intelligence, which would require Senate approval. Now, Jay Clayton is a very interesting pick. He doesn't really have a national security background. He probably has dealt with some national security issues in his roles, particularly as the attorney for the Southern District of New York. But he's more known for his role as an SEC commissioner. I think Republican lawmakers generally view him favorably. They see him as someone who is of high intellect, and while he may not have, you know, the full background they would desire for this role, I think they believe him believe he is a capable person. So it'll be an interesting nomination to follow in the coming days and weeks. Republicans want to try and get it done quickly so they can move on to other things, and also to try and deal with this 702 reauthorization that, you know, could lapse today. 702 is supposed to be a intelligence gathering tool that focuses on non-U.S. citizens who are outside of the U.S. There are some civil libertarian lawmakers who are concerned that it may or does catch some American citizens in the dragnet, and how to try and prevent that from happening. You know, in my conversations with lawmakers who sit on the Intelligence Committee, they have told me that this tool comprises about 70% of what the president sees in his daily intelligence briefing. So it's a pretty important tool that most lawmakers recognize its importance. But, you know, because of the civil libertarian concerns and also Bill Pulte's appointment as interim DNI, it's probably going to lapse here unless something happens today. However, there is kind of a little quirk in the way this works is that there is a one-year certification that took place, I think, in March. So technically, like, this can keep ongoing if there is if there is no authorization today. So I think lawmakers are trying to figure out if, you know, this can keep going on via executive action until they resolve all the outstanding issues. So very interesting to follow. And, you know, I think we'll probably be talking about it again in a week or so.
Yeah, very interesting indeed how this is all developed, still ongoing and definitely a topic we'll follow up on. Maybe one more for this week, Shane. I know the White House recently proposed a 10% tariff plan on several countries, among them China, the United Kingdom, European Union member nations. How is this expected to play out, this in the wake of the Supreme Court earlier this year having ruled against the Trump administration's use of IEEPA to implement the 2025 tariffs?
Well, this is part of the Trump administration's plan in the wake of that Supreme Court ruling. You may remember that right after that Supreme Court ruling, President Trump signed an executive order imposing a 10% global tariff under an existing authorities, what is known as Section 122. While he has authority to utilize Section 122 for that 10% tariff, that has a cap on how long it can be used for, I think 150 days. So you should view this next round of tariffs as, you know, part of the plan, because that 10% under Section 122 is going to be expiring soon. So this is all in the wake of that Supreme Court justice. So this next phase, to your point, is going to be through existing authorities. So would likely withstand, you know, any court challenges, unless there is something, you know, perceived to go beyond what is the authority. As you note, this would probably hit 3 to 4 dozen countries. I think it would be, you know, focused on some things like steel and aluminum. And, you know, I think the Trump administration has pretty good standing here. And I think it's really an evolution of what we've seen play out in trade. I think, as we've talked about before, while things may seem quiet on the trade / tariff front, you should never view it as that. You know, I think tariffs will remain a part of the Trump administration throughout the remainder of his term here. So you can never kind of let down your guard if you're concerned about tariffs and their impact. They're here. They're here to stay. They just may change, you know, how exactly they're implemented and maybe to what degree. Is it 10% or higher? So a little fluid, but I think, you know, we see the writing on the wall that the tariffs are coming back just in a renewed fashion, and they'll likely continue throughout the remainder of President Trump's term here.
Yeah, the evolution of U.S. trade policy has been quite fascinating over the past couple of years, and we'll continue to monitor this and see where it goes. Though, Shane, thank you again for dropping by the podcast on this Friday morning. Covered a lot of ground for our listeners. Appreciate the insights, and I look forward to catching back up with you next week.
Great. Thank you. Have yourself a great weekend, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you, Shane. Have a great weekend. And to you, our listeners, this has been the Washington Weekly Podcast. I want to point you, our listeners, as well to the Washington Weekly publication, which can now be located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.